With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
Hello there, I'm Chuck Todd. This is the Chuck Todd Cast. So today is a special day because we are finally back to doing something we haven't done in, well, almost 3 years. If you don't count the post-show podcasts, right, Elias? I'm talking to my producer here after the Sunday show. And that is, we have an in-person guest for the Toddcast. During the pandemic, we switched to doing these online for obvious reasons. There have been some bumps, but you stuck with us. And we're not the only podcast that's had these issues. We appreciate that. So today, I'm excited to welcome someone who's no stranger to the NBC Bureau, though the bureau he walked into is not the one he worked at, since we have physically moved locations. He was at one point the senior producer of the NBC News investigative unit. And recently, he has spent years investigating America's most dangerous female spy for his book, Codename Blue Wren. Anna Montez was just recently released from prison on January 6, 2023. So who knows? A spy could be in your midst right now. Perhaps she'll be listening to this podcast at some point. Maybe she will. Jim Popkin, welcome back. Welcome home.
Thank you so much. What a pleasure to be here at NBC and to see you.
Yeah, our new studios. My first office at NBC and Jim Hopkins' office were catty corner from each other. We were separated by one Lisa Myers.
That is correct.
Basically. And that was a great place to begin my days at NBC because you and Lisa Myers were always cooking up a whole bunch of stories that were never going to make air. But it was awesome. you miss it?
Sometimes.
this book it's a book about the most notorious female spy in American history. And what's fascinating is that this is one of those things, and we in the news business, this happens all the time, where a story is amazing and never breaks through because right. There's a bigger story you're covering in the moment. And that bigger story that this story got consumed by was 9/11.
Yeah.
So walk me through the month of September 2001. Anna Montez, what was happening?
Well, to start on a kind of more personal NBC note for a second, as you know, Chuck, I was at that time in 2001 was teamed with Pete Williams, obviously the justice correspondent at NBC, and Pete and I were covering 9/11. That's it. That's all for obvious reasons. All we were covering. This story broke. She was arrested on Friday, September 21st, so 10 days after 9/11. And I remember being really fascinated with it. I love spy stories, and we had done a number of them, including the Robert Hansen, the FBI agent who spied for Russia. But we couldn't get to it, and it was literally, Trump by bigger events.
Was he the one in Vienna, Virginia?
Yes.
That was doing things like at a park near the correct. Metro and all of those things?
Correct, yes.
Yes, yes. I remember pacing off. I had somebody who lived in the same complex. A friend of mine lived in the same complex as him.
Yeah. So, but Anna was arrested, and it really kind of came and went. I had a college roommate who called me about a week later and said, did you see this story? And I said, yeah, why are you calling? And he said, she bought my apartment. She bought my condo.
Oh, wow.
And so I had been in this apartment so many times. So I felt this personal connection, and I stayed with the story over the years. But yeah, September 2001, it is not coincidental that she was arrested at that time. She had already been under investigation for almost a year. It started late 2000. And when 9/11 hit, the director of her agency, she worked for the DIA, Defense Intelligence Agency, which is the intelligence arm in the military. The director of the agency knew that he had an accused Cuban spy on his staff. And 9/11 hits. The DIA is responsible for taking the U.S. military to war in Afghanistan. And he said, that's it.
We got a clean house.
We got a clean house. We have to get rid of it. I can't have a spy.
This might have dragged on longer.
Right.
Maybe dotting. I mean, when you're accusing your own analysts of being a spy, right? You're dotting every I, you're crossing every T, because what could look like espionage might simply be a counterintelligence move, right? So you have to be extraordinarily careful.
Right. In this case, the most damning evidence they had on her came from an FBI black bag search of her apartment, the same apartment I was mentioning that I was in. And they went in, they had court authority to do this, but they went in, they found her shortwave radio. That's how she got messages from Cuba. Mm-hmm. And they found her Toshiba laptop. They copied the hard drive and they found messages to and from Cuba. Mm-hmm. So they knew she, at that point, that was May 2001, they knew she was a spy, but they were really hoping to find her meeting with a handler, passing a document or a disc, and that never happened.
What makes this such an incredible book to read and such a page turner is that it's her own background and her father's background and her sister, the FBI agent, who a distinguished FBI agent, correct?
FBI employee. She was a translator. Okay, her brother was an agent.
Her brother's an agent.
Correct.
So this is, in theory, what looks like an extraordinarily, and her father's military service, extraordinarily patriotic family.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I mean, and yet there was something familiar. I grew up in Miami. There was something familiar about her because some of my older friends, you know, I'm 50, but some of my older friends that are in their late 50s, early 60s, we were all obsessed with the American role in Latin American politics.
Right.
Okay. Whether you were reading your Che books, what was happening in El Salvador, what was happening in Nicaragua, Iran-Contra was such a defining moment for many of these folks in college. Again, and so she grew up in a familiar culture to me. So I am shocked that she got as far into the intelligence community as she did, given what you found out about her obvious, you know, skepticism of America's role in Latin America.
Yeah. So just some quick background on Ana Montes. She's an American. Her parents are Puerto Rican. Ana was raised in Topeka, Kansas, and just outside of Baltimore. She went to the University of Virginia, and then she went to the Hopkins Graduate School in Washington. Her dad was in the Army. He was an Army doctor. He retired as a colonel. Her dad's an important figure. He was a brilliant guy, but he was abusive, very bad, you know, severely abusive.
To both of his daughters?
To the whole family.
To the whole family.
He would beat the kids with a belt when they were five for any minor childhood transgression. Very, very tough on his wife. He remarried and continued the pattern with the new family. And, after the fact, after Ana was arrested, the CIA looked at this in a classified behavioral profile and said she was very influenced by this. She had a problem with authority because she had clashed so severely with her father. But what's amazing is, and you know, I love spy stories as you do, but what's incredible about this is her entire family ended up joining the FBI. Her sister Lucy becomes a translator with the Bureau in Miami. She's there the whole time on a spy.
Rooting out Cuban spies.
Correct.
Right?
She gets
like
assigned.
That's her job.
That is right. She gets assigned to a unit that finds Cuban spies in Miami. She has no idea that the greatest Cuban spy of all time is sitting next to her at birthday parties and weddings. Her brother Tito becomes an FBI special agent. His wife, Joan, becomes an FBI special agent. So at one point, there are four close family members. Lucy's then husband also was with the Bureau, and they had no idea. Ana ends up, she agrees to spy for the Cubans in late 1984. A week or two later, Lucy calls and says, great news. She had been selling ladies' blouses at Hex in Baltimore, and she calls and says, I'm going to work for the FBI. There's a dead silence on the other end. Ana must, it was like the worst possible thing that could have happened to her.
Do we think she was recruited by, look, you seem to be very skeptical of her time at SAIS, Johns Hopkins mm-hmm. Graduate mm-hmm. School, and certainly there were some empathetic professors there. Is that where she got recruited?
Yeah, it is. You know, she's a political spy based on, you know, her ideology. It started earlier. It actually started her junior year abroad in Madrid. But when she gets to SAIS, she's surrounded by a lot of people who are upset about Reagan's policies in Central America, as you alluded to, Chuck.
No, it was this. And again, I go back. you know, again, it's for older, few older friends. I'm sure you, you know, that was raging on college campuses.
Absolutely.
Between that and apartheid in South Africa, those were the two things that were raging on the left on college campuses.
Absolutely. Nicaragua and El Salvador and the Reagan administration was so aggressive. And so leftists in this country and all over the world were horrified. Anna was outspoken at that period, and there was another student at SAIS named Marta Velazquez who was there. She had already been recruited by the Cubans. She hears Anna, she befriends her, and she introduces her to this Cuban intelligence officer in New York. And then the two young women, they're in their late 20s, travel to Havana. They go D.C., Madrid, Prague. They get fake passports, new clothes, wigs, and they travel to Havana and they get their first Spy 101 training. And then Anna comes back and starts to apply to all these jobs with the U.S. intelligence community.
And she just keeps making it through with flying colors, huh? I mean, I sort of look at this and I wonder, you know, on one hand, we say there's a serious vetting process that goes when, particularly on sensitive intelligence jobs. I'm surprised that her college activities weren't red flags.
It should have been. And her first job in the government was with the Justice Department. And during a background check, the FBI found someone who said, I have a problem with her. I think she's disloyal to our country. And yet she gets hired by DIA. At the time, they didn't do polygraphs as part of the entrance.
Okay.
She's hired. She's got a top security clearance. They up it. They give her an SCI clearance
right away.
She's
got a good job, right?
She's smart.
Okay. I mean, obviously she's extraordinarily smart.
Really smart, competent, very disciplined, a very disciplined person. I mean, she essentially, so once she gets to DIA, she has two jobs. Her day job, her legit job is, I come in, I'm going to read all these classified documents, work right through lunch at her little cubbyhole at DIA, and memorize. She almost never took documents out of the building, unlike Robert Hansen or Rick Ames, who was at CIA. She memorized. So she leaves around 5-6 o'clock. She comes home. Little workout, little dinner, and then boom, right into her second job, which is typing in her notes from that day into her Toshiba. And then every couple weeks, she'd meet with her Cuban handler in Chinese restaurants in D.C. and pass along reams and reams of classified material.
Always Chinese restaurants?
Not always, but often.
Was there one in particular?
There were a couple. They were right by the metro. It's basically right around Cleveland Park and Northwest D.C.
Yeah. Always important to get the specifics right.
Understood.
Yeah,
understood.
In going through this, you had said before we got started, I said, did you ever interview Anna? And you said, no, she had a real lot. There was a strict lockdown on her.
Yeah.
They really limited who could talk to her, right?
Yeah. So after her arrest in 2001, she pled guilty and she cooperated. She's sent to a prison that few people know about, but it's actually the supermax for women in the federal system.
Mm-hmm. Where is it?
It's in Fort Worth. It's called Carswell. And Carswell there's a big federal a hospital there for inmates. Mm-hmm. And there are a couple of other prisons, but where she was put, it's called the admin unit. It's only about 20 beds, and it's really the worst of the worst in the federal system. So Anna was there with Squeaky Fromm of Manson family fame, who also tried to assassinate President Ford, an Al-Qaeda terrorist, a serial murderer, drug dealers, and a lot of very seriously psychotic people. Mm-hmm. And it's a very dangerous small facility. And so say what you will about her. She ended up only serving 21 years and 3 months of a 25-year sentence. But
only, I mean, that's,
well, it was, paid,
you know, she served almost all of it. That's it. That,
right.
You know, that doesn't always happen.
And it was hard. It was hard time. I guess it's my,
point.
Yeah. But yes, to your question, Chuck, she was under massive restrictions in terms of who she could talk to.
Just because of everything she knew, right?
Yeah, she's got a lot in her head.
And clearly good at memorizing.
Yes.
So who of her family did cooperate with you?
With me?
Yeah.
Her sister Lucy cooperated.
She's still with the FBI or she retired?
She retired, yes. Her sister-in-law, Joan, who was an FBI special agent.
They're all in their mid-60s now, right?
Yes, that is correct.
It's hard to admit that, but they are, right?
Yeah. Well,
I'm doing my own math.
Yeah. Anna is 65 now. Yeah.
Do you expect to hear from her?
I don't who she, when she just surfaced. So she was released on Friday, this past Friday. On Sunday, this weekend, she's in Puerto Rico now, where she has a cousin who's very friendly and
she
a lot of sympathizers.
Is she on probation?
She's on probation for 5 years.
Okay.
She issued this incredible statement, though, which said, I'm not going to talk to the media and I need to find work. But the U.S. embargo and with Cuba is immoral. And she went kind of on her high horse, which I thought was remarkable. There is no contrition. She is not apologetic for what she did.
She got people killed.
I can only say that with one person that and it's not definitive. There's a Green Beret who was serving in El Salvador. She had visited that base right before the base was attacked. She said in debriefs, she didn't admit to providing specifics about the base security to the Cubans, but she said that is exactly the kind of thing that I would have shared. So and she was never charged with that murder, but it is highly likely. She spent a couple weeks at the base. She said afterwards, yeah, that's the kind of thing I would have shared. And whoever attacked that base had very specific information about the security.
So the thing that struck me here is I thought after Bay of Pigs, we stopped being in the Castro assassination business. And this, you seem to imply that, no, we hadn't stopped. It was just more sophisticated.
Well, I don't know about that, but the level of tension between our countries obviously exists to this day. It's fascinating just to see how things have seesawed back. As you know, under Obama, loosened up. He visited the country, and I thought we were really at a real crossroads there. But then when President Trump was elected, he got rid of all of that.
Right.
President Biden now has kept a lot of the Trump era policies in place. He's loosened some aspects of it, but it's still like it is like the Cold War has never gone away between our nations.
And it's my understanding there's still a ton of espionage.
Yes.
There's a ton of that. Mexico City is a hotbed of Cuban espionage, is my understanding. And frankly, American espionage the other way.
Like absolutely.
That Mexico City is sort of the gateway, essentially, to all things Havana.
Right.
Is that how you understand?
Yeah. In fact, it's funny you mentioned that. When Anna had an escape bag with her that was found in her apartment, and part of her escape plan, which she obviously never activated, was to go to a museum in, not in Mexico City, but right outside of it, to meet the Cubans and get away, presumably to escape to Cuba. There's always been a close connection between Mexico and Cuba and the United States. The Cuban intelligence service, many folks don't realize it, they're really good.
They've always been extraordinarily good. I'm just surprised that they still invest so much money in it to this day.
Yeah. Well, they're scrappy. I mean, their military obviously is not much to speak of, especially compared to our nation, but they put their money into the intelligence service, the DGI, and they're crafty and they get the job done. And Montes is the best example of that.
Do you think what she did over a 15-year period set Cuban-American relations back, or in some cases, she was helping to create policy to open the door? Like, did she actually set the table for the loosening that we saw through the first decade of the 21st century?
Well, that's a really important question. She did play a role in the Clinton administration. She actually helped to write the first draft of our official report on the threat that Cuba posed to the U.S. She provided it to the Secretary of Defense, and it was reported to Congress. It really lowballed what Cuba's potential was. It said, yeah, their military isn't much to speak of, but really there's not much of an intelligence threat either. This is Castro's spy who wrote the first draft of this. That is remarkable.
It's actually remarkable.
Yeah. It is. That is incredible.
Castro's spy wrote our first sort of formal policy in a post-Castro or whatever you want to call it.
Right. But But ultimately, when she was found out and arrested, I think it did harm relations. It was a slap in the face to the U.S. that someone who was considered the Queen of Cuba, the top Cuba expert within the U.S. military.
Like if you went around to the government in 1998 and you said, who can tell me about what's going on in Cuba? Anna Montez would have been the person you were
Absolutely.
Told to talk to, right?
Yeah. In fact, she briefed a lot of reporters before they went over there. So she was playing both sides. She had it coming and going.
Look, this is something we want moles in other countries. Mm-hmm. We do this. Mm-hmm. The biggest moles that we have found in our country we have Anna Montez. I guess you'd say Mr. Pollard, Jonathan Pollard,
right.
with Israel.
Right.
Who did this? Robert Hansen, yep. Aldridge Ames. I mean, mm-hmm. and there's likely somebody right now.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's the thing. There likely is. What did the intelligence services learn from this incident, and how have they changed?
They learned that the insider threat is something that we really have to consider. And, it is Cuba.
By the way, I'm having flashbacks to Kevin Costner in the movie No Way Out. Right. Because I love the fact that you have the national security, the character in here, the national security agency guy who did. I just know there's a mole, but they don't know who it is. And it goes right to that movie. It's like they know there's a mole, but they have no idea who it is.
Exactly.
And it's like, it's actually the person right in front of your face.
I love that.
I love right out of the Kevin Costner movie.
I love the big reveal in that movie. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
So it's a very big problem. I think the intelligence community learned insider threats are real. We have to worry about it, obviously, with Russia, with China, and even really with political extremists in this country on the left and the right. It's a concern now as well.
Well, there's it's like, do you get the sense that she intentionally went into government with this in mind, or that she her first instinct was going to government to change it?
She went in with the cooperation of the Cubans. They actually helped her.
She knew
her.
That all the way.
Absolutely.
So this is not something she was recruited after she got the job.
Right.
She was recruited in college.
Yep.
And said, we've got a new career for you.
Correct. And this woman we were talking about, Marta Velazquez, who was her friend and classmate at SAIS, mm-hmm. actually helped her type the application to DIA.
Where's Marta today?
I found Marta in Stockholm, Sweden. We tracked her down.
It's Sweden. Of course, it's somewhere in Europe. I mean, it's like right out of the movie script. Anyway, go ahead.
She lives just outside of Stockholm. She's a school teacher there. She is free because Stockholm refuses to extradite anyone accused of espionage. She's been indicted by the Justice Department. Mm-hmm. That's been around for over a decade, and she lives there freely. I hired a local reporter. We got questions to her. She wouldn't talk to us. We also got the first photos of her. She's lived a free life. She's got a Volvo in the driveway. She's got a country home in Sweden. She's had it pretty good. Meanwhile, her compadre, Anna, spent 21 years in a hellhole prison. Mm-hmm. So it's the contrast is remarkable.
How's Lucy about all this?
Yeah, Lucy, her sister, first talked to me. I wrote a piece for the Washington Post 10 years ago. She talked to me then because she wanted the world to know Anna, my sister, should not define my family.
Yeah.
Really proud, really proud immigrant family. Yeah. And, she wanted everyone to know that this is not her family. And she had a high level of anger then. She still does, but her sister just got out of prison. She's got to get her sister to see her mother again. Her mother's
still alive.
Everyone lives in South Florida, which is a security issue.
Right.
But what Lucy has expressed to me is that she wants to try to rebuild a relationship with her sister. She's torn. I love my sister, and I absolutely despise what she did. How do I rectify those two emotions?
It's funny. It's like we all have those challenges in our families.
Right.
You can't pick your family. You can pick your friends.
Yeah.
Can't pick your family.
That is true.
And you have to decide what's in, what will make you feel, what will give you peace.
Yeah.
Sounds like what gives her peace is to have a relationship with her sister.
She wants to try to have a relationship, but I haven't spoken to her this week, but I think even the statement that Anna released probably is making things a little challenging because it was a fiery, defiant statement. And Anna is, as I said, not apologetic.
Let me pause there. We're going to take a quick break and talk about the Charles Manson connection. You're listening to the Chuck Toddcast from Meet the Press.
From Freakonomics Radio, a new series about a role model we didn't know we needed.
So many crazy things really did happen to him.
The physicist Richard Feynman was one of the most brilliant scientists of his generation, but he was also a troublemaker, an obsessive, and a man who spoke truth to power. Along the way, he created a blueprint for how to lead a life of honest inquiry.
He was a brilliant theoretical physicist, but what really made him stand out was his humanity.
The curious, brilliant, vanishing Mr. Feynman on Freakonomics Radio.
All right. Let's do a coda here. Squeaky Frome. How was that? Face to face? Did you get face to face with her?
I visited her home. We just missed each other, but we've talked many times on the phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
First of all, what is she? She's got to be in her 70s now, right?
Yeah.
What's her level of regret?
Here's the amazing thing about Squeaky Frome. Just to, you know, people don't remember her. She was Charles Manson's girlfriend. She, at the Manson trial, when there was the murder trial, Charles Manson, you know, ultimately went to prison, obviously. Right. She was outside the whole time keeping vigil. Several years later, just continued to draw attention to Manson. She attempted to shoot President right. Ford in Sacramento. She was in prison and in the same cell area with Anna. She's really, really bright, and you can have a normal conversation with her. Then, if you ask her about Charlie Manson, a switch flips.
It's almost like hypnotic.
She loves the guy. Yeah. She just absolutely loves him, and she has not changed at all. He's the most important figure in her life to this day, and she still reveres him. She's released from prison.
Wow.
Yeah.
She was totally clear-eyed, and you felt like a trusted source on her observations of Anna?
Yes, in a very narrow way. I found her. I reached out to her. That was difficult. She was a reluctant witness. She really did not want to talk that much about another cellmate. It was almost like a privacy violation.
Yeah.
But I convinced her to talk, and I found her very reliable just in that limited area. And then I thought, well, what the heck? I'm going to ask her about Manson. What was that like? And I she does not back away at all. She still really loves Charlie Manson.
That's fascinating. Johns Hopkins. This is Seiss is around these parts. You know, if you're a lawyer and you work for the and you want to work for the government, Georgetown or Harvard or Yale. And if you want to work in foreign service, it's Seiss. How did Hopkins? What did they decide to do about this professor?
I would say that Hopkins has a little image issue here because, look, they had two Cuban spies at that era. At the same time, there was a professor there named Kendall Myers. He's in Supermax right now. He was arrested and convicted also for spying for Cuba. That was all in the same period. Just recently, within the last year, they had another student there who was posing, I believe, as a Brazilian, but he actually is a Russian, and he's a Russian spy. I think it's true that all Seiss and all these other graduate schools that focus on foreign affairs are great targets, but there does not seem to be a wonderful screening system at these schools.
Well, because the screening system gets clouded by the number of zeros on the check that the that the individual can write, right?
Yeah.
These graduate schools, they're... This is how Hopkins makes their money.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, there's freedom of speech. So you're
absolutely
you're allowed to express whatever view you want. But
there's one thing about expressing a view. There's another thing about weaponizing.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
I mean, there is a line here. I think.
Agreed.
passion project of yours?
This
How long
is,
was this in the making?
15 years. I started this. I started researching this 15 years ago. Absolutely love it. Going to stick with it. There's more. I was speaking
is your
yesterday.
Second book here?
My first book.
No, is there a second book in here?
No, but there's a second book in me because I love the process and I want to write another nonfiction book.
Spies? You want to stick with national security? You want to stick with Cuba?
Not sure. No to Cuba. Not sure yet. Definitely nonfiction and want to keep at it. I've loved it.
How many Cuban spies do you think live in South Florida?
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
It's always been the case.
It's very complicated.
Yeah. And Mexico City is still truly the center of this, but still there's definitely some stuff there. Well, congrats. I mean, I can't wait to watch the Netflix version of this someday or Apple Plus. Well, we'll decide. We want to see a bidding war here.
There you go.
Hulu, Amazon, Netflix, Apple Plus. Get your act together and sign Popkin's book.
From your lips, Mr. Chuck.
Good to talk with you.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to the Chuck Toddcast from Meet the Press. Today's episode was produced by Justice Gilpin Green and Elias Miller. Our theme music composed by Spoke Media. Meet the Press Now is live every day at 4 p.m. Eastern on NBC News Now. You can, of course, get it anywhere you type in the word NBC News Now. And there's The Big Show available on Sunday mornings wherever you get your NBC programming. Thanks for listening, and until we upload again.
From Freakonomics Radio, a new series about a role model we didn't know we needed.
So many crazy things really did happen to him.
The physicist Richard Feynman was one of the most brilliant scientists of his generation, but he was also a troublemaker, an obsessive, and a man who spoke truth to power. Along the way, he created a blueprint for how to lead a life of honest inquiry.
He was a brilliant theoretical physicist, but what really made him stand out was his humanity.
The curious, brilliant, vanishing Mr. Feynman on Freakonomics Radio.